Okay, we're continuing on our study of the revelation of Jesus Christ. And since it's been a few weeks, we're going to kind of do a real fast review of 12 because it's going to tie into chapter 13 here, just from some of the slides. We started off in chapter 12. And again, the sections that we talked about prior to, like in our introduction, we have the seven sections that the book is divided into. Each of the sections spans the church age, which is from Christ's first coming to Christ's second coming. So it deals with events that we are dealing with now. So we looked in chapter 12, verses 1 through 6, and we talked about the woman, the dragon, and the child, the male child. And so we see that the woman is that picture of Israel, from whom the child Jesus Christ came from physically. And then after he ascends to heaven, the woman is a picture of the church. We dealt with the dragon, which is Satan. He has the seven heads and 10 horns, and the seven heads have diadems or crowns on them. He sweeps away a third of the stars, which shows the rebellion of the angels when he fell. When he fell away, he had swept away a third of the stars. And it's important to point out this happened in the order of this. This was prior to the birth of the male child. Okay, so he swept away the third of the stars when he rebelled close to creation, not at creation, but close to it, whenever that time was. Okay, so then we continue on there that the child was caught up to rule. And we looked at that phrase, he rules the nations with a rod of iron, okay? And that's as spoken of in Psalm chapter 2. And in Psalm chapter 2, when Jesus, talking about Jesus, he rules the nation with a rod of iron, it says, you are my son, today I have begotten you, okay? And we compare that with Acts 13. When Paul's preaching there, he's saying that Jesus was begotten when he was resurrected from the dead. You know, it wasn't when he was born, it wasn't when he returns in the future, it's when he resurrected from the dead. So when in chapter 5, or verse 5 there, verse 5 and 6, when he's ruling with a rod of iron, when that happens, when he's begotten there, that's talking about the beginning of the church age. Okay, and so what we're seeing in Revelation chapter 12 deals with something right in connection with his ascension, which obviously the birth happened, and then he was caught up to God, which is his ascension, okay? And so then the church was protected for 1,260 days. For those of you who've been in the class from the beginning, what is the 1,260 days?
Time and a half of time. 3.5 years.
Yeah, 3.5 years.
Christ.
Yes, the church age. Okay, or what's another reference? 42 months. Okay. So we'll get to that today. But I mean, the 1,260 days is when the church is protected. Okay. Now, obviously, we're persecuted, but as a whole, Satan cannot destroy the church. Okay. So for the church age, the church is protected. As it says there, that she fled into the wilderness and is protected for 1,260 days. Then we talked about our portion freed from sin. Okay, we talked about the devil and his angels fighting Michael and his angels. Okay, and Michael and his angels, there was no place for the devil and his angels in heaven, and they were cast down. Okay, and we asked, when did that happen and how did that happen? Okay, and we referenced how Michael didn't even pronounce a judgment against Satan, except he said, "The Lord rebuke you." Okay, he did it on the Lord's authority. So when is this happening? How is Michael able to cast him out? Like, what authority does he have? And we looked into some of those things, and we showed a couple things that salvation wasn't available prior to the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. There was a covering for sins, but the people in the Old Testament didn't have their sins forgiven. All they had them is covered up until Jesus came to provide the sacrifice for the righteous, both in the Old Covenant and the New Covenant, okay? And so we went through there, and we talked about the kingdom, how we are a part of the kingdom now. And then we went and looked at how they argued over the body of Moses, how in Jude 1, where Michael and Satan argue over the body of Moses. And we looked at that, and we are, you know, the word body is used 18 times just in chapter 12 of 1 Corinthians. 18 times talking, and I mean, it's used other times, but in that chapter, it's used 18 times, and every one of them is talking about a spiritual body, not a physical body. And so when we talk about the devil didn't have much interest in than Moses' physical body, but he definitely had an interest in the spiritual body of Moses, which would be the righteous under the old covenant. And so when we're talking about Satan being cast down, we went to Zechariah chapter 3. You know, the Jude 1:9, when it says the Lord rebuke you, is an Old Testament phrase, and it's found in Zechariah chapter 3. It's when Joshua, Joshua the high priest, as a different Joshua, when he is standing before God and he's in filthy garments or sin, okay? Representing the old covenant people, they still had the sin there, and Satan's accusing them. So Satan's accusing them, and then we see after that, he says, "The Lord rebuke you, Satan." And then Joshua is pictured there as putting on good, clean garments and a new turban, and the sin is taken away. And that's a foreshadow, because we referenced Hebrews chapter 11 and chapter 9, is that the old covenant people did not receive what was promised. They were looking forward. Apart from us, they couldn't be made perfect. So in order for them to have their sins forgiven, they had to have Jesus had to come and die and resurrect. So they are brought into the body of Christ because of Christ's death. So the devil can no longer stand and accuse. He is cast out, he's thrown down. And we know that didn't happen when he rebelled, because he stands and accuses Job. He says, if you wouldn't have this hedge around him, he would sin. He would blast, he would curse your name. But there is a time when he wasn't able to accuse us anymore, and that was when the Lord rebuked him, because the Lord had a sacrifice for the sins of the people of the old covenant and the people now. And so he can no longer accuse us, because that's what it says in chapter 12, that he's thrown down. In verse 10, he says, the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down. He accuses them before God day and night. He can no longer do that because he is cast down. Okay, so we have access to God, and we talked about our immersions into Christ. Our sins are forgiven. The devil can't even touch us. He can't even accuse us. Yeah, he can persecute us physically and mentally. Yeah, we've got obviously that spiritually persecuting where he weighs us down, but he cannot separate us from God if we are faithful to him, to God. And so he can accuse us. He can no longer accuse us before God because Christ has a sacrifice. And then we talked about the church being delivered from Satan, and we had that picture, which again we're going to reference a little bit today again, but that picture of us being raised up, you know, or being born again or born from above, okay, that we are offspring, if you will, of the people, of the church, I mean, okay? The devil cannot destroy the church as a whole, but he is seeking to destroy the church, individual Christians. That's the only way that he can do something. He doesn't care about obedience for his own sake. He just wants people to disobey. Okay, and so continue on there. It's kind of rolling through. We talked about Israel again, how it's spiritual Israel, not physical Israel. And we talked about the earth for 42 months. The woman has a time of nourishment for time and a half of times. Or 1,260 days, or 3.5 years, or 42 months, whatever way you want to say it. That's that picture of the church age, and the church has the nourishment. But the devil is trying to destroy her somehow, but he can't. Even when he pours water out of his mouth, the earth drinks it up. You know, and we talked about that a little bit too, is that those who are of the earth are the wicked. And we'll get into that again today as well too. We'll touch on some of those things. When it says those who dwell in heaven, that's talking about the church, okay, in the revelation of Jesus Christ here. And so when the earth swallows up what Satan has, I mean, they're serving him whether they want to or not, but the wrath of the devil sometimes falls on them too. or they drink it all up, or however you want to view that. But the church is saved from the devil and from him trying to destroy her. So now, as we get here, now he's enraged, and so he goes and makes war with individual Christians, is what it says, and that's how the close of chapter 12 finishes up there. And we're going to reference back to there even today a little bit again, but that's how it closes out. So that context there, as we get into chapter 13, is important to remember as we're going through there. But anybody have any questions or anything on the review? A few questions on the review, Brandon, do you?
I was just wondering, do you think when that day that he was cast down, mm-hmm. do you think Michael had a t-shirt on and said not to
be saved? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. Anyway.
So you said to start with, Kirk, that there was seven full deals between, there's repetition seven times.
Seven times.
The church age, or, mm-hmm. from Jesus coming to Jesus
return
back again.
Right.
It's not so, basically what it does is it starts over again and then goes right. again and starts over mm-hmm. again. Seven
yeah.
times. It's repetition, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we talked about in chapter 11, we see a picture of judgment. And then chapter 12, we see the birth of Christ. So again, you're starting over again. And so with that in mind, then this chapters 13 and 14 are going to describe in the third section here that we're going, or the fourth section, I guess, that we're going over. It's going to describe events that happen in a little more detail on certain events that happen, that will happen or have happened or are happening from Christ's first coming to Christ's second coming. Okay, so we will go to chapter 13 today. And if somebody would like to read verses 1 through 8 of Revelation chapter 13.
And he stood on the sand of the sea shore, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his heads were blasphemous names. The beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his throne and his and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, who is able to wage war with him? And there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months was given to him. And he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, that is, those who dwell in heaven. And it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who has been slain.
Okay. So the question then is, and you're going to get quite a few answers here if this question is asked in the broad, is that who is the beast of the sea and where does he, or when does he rule? Okay, so you have your different various answers of when that happened or when it will happen or who he is or who he will be. And so today we're going to look at some of the details of that to determine what is talking about here. And again, remember, more reference back to it again, chapter 12 ends with Satan trying to destroy the church and making war with them, with individual Christians. And then it starts off with, in verse 1 there of chapter 13, and we'll get back to some of that wording here in a minute. But first off, the beast that comes out of the sea. Okay, we know that verse 1, he comes out of the sea, and that's different to when we get down to verse 11, you see a second beast that comes out of from the earth. Okay, so the beast from the sea is describing a particular thing then, because he's referencing the sea, and there's references in both the New Testament and Old Testament with this. So the turn to Revelation 17, just ahead a little bit here. It talks about waters and many waters. If somebody would like to read verse 15 of Revelation chapter 17.
And he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues.
Okay, so the waters there, okay, we're obviously going to get to this when we get to chapter 17, but the waters where she sat, if you reference back in verse 4, 3 and 4, the woman, verse 3 and 4, you see the beast full of blasphemous names, and the woman is clothed in purple. She is sitting there riding on the horns of the beast, if you read on down through chapter 17 there. And so the waters there, it's referenced as it explains in verse 15, the waters which you saw, in verse 1, I guess it talks about the many waters, what you saw is peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So basically what it's saying then is that the water is representing the world. Okay? The water is representing the world. So the sea represents the world. So the beast that comes from the sea has something to do with the world as a whole, not just an area of the world. Okay, so water is referenced the world in the New Testament here. Back in the Old Testament, well, I guess wait, they're saying in chapter 13, then the sea would represent the world then. But we also get this reference back in Daniel chapter 7. So it's Old Testament reference. If we turn back to Daniel chapter 7, we see something similar here to chapter 13 of Revelation back in Daniel chapter 7. So Daniel has this vision, has this dream. If somebody would like to pick up in verse 2 and read through verse 7 of Daniel chapter 7, please.
Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and the four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first one like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind also was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one, resembling a bear, and it was raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth between the teeth. And thus they said to it, arise, devour much meat. And after this I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird, and the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I kept looking in the north visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong, and it had large iron teeth. It devoured and crashed and trampled down the remainder within its feet. And it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns.
Okay, so we see the scene starts off with here. It's centered around the winds of heaven stirring up the great sea. So you have heaven and earth, okay? Now, when you go here and you look at the four different, I don't want to get ahead of myself here. So the world here, I guess the picture here first is that if you think of the sea, okay, you remember when Jesus calms the waters, okay, and it was the Sea of Galilee even. It was a small sea, okay? And the disciples say, who is this that even the seas and winds obey him? Okay, if you take about, like, you think about, like, on Earth, okay, I know you have people now that are like, what's in outer space and aliens and whatnot, and it's garbage, but on Earth, where is, like, I mean, you have your mysteries on Earth, but as far as the deep of the waters and the ocean, there's many mysteries, many more mysteries that people don't know, Okay, so you think about that reference that they say, well, who is this that even the seas and the winds obey him? Is that he has control over all of the unknown, but they're unknown and they're unstable, like to the human mind. If you go out to the sea and you're on a boat and the winds pick up and you see all these waves, I mean, it's unstable. I mean, wind's bad enough when you're on land, you know, but you have that picture of the sea, it's unstable. So you see that how unstable all this is, and the beast that comes from the sea, all these beasts come from the sea, they're unstable too. Okay, and just referencing in Hebrews chapter 12, and for the sake of time, I won't go there, but it talks about how God says, yet once more, he'll shake not only the earth, but the heavens also. Okay, and he's referencing there is that every physical thing is going to be shaken, but the kingdom that we have will not be shaken because it's firm. And so you see every physical thing here, the waves and the waters, they are unstable. It's stirring up the great sea. The winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. So you see this waves crashing and whatnot. Okay, unstable. Continuing on here, as Christians, as we look through this stuff here, we need to make sure that we have our spiritual glasses on, because your view of this is going to be determined based upon what view you have to start with. And if our physical view is on, then it's going to change what the Bible is actually trying to say to us. If our spiritual glasses are on, like the Lord views things, you know, his view is soul and eternity versus the body and physical. You know, he's concerned about that more than he has physical things. So we see that this here, from the Lord's view, the world, I mean, even from our view, if our eyes are open, our view, the world is kind of unstable right now. But from the Lord's view, the world is always that way, because there's no foundation. It's all physical. It's all about the flesh. It's not about him. So you see the beast coming from the sea, and they're on the sea. That sea is representing the world, but it's also representing instability. Okay. So we're going to come back to chapter 7 of Daniel, but we're going to go back to chapter 2 of Daniel here real fast, and we're going to show a couple things. Someone like to read verse 36 through 43 of Daniel chapter 2, please.
This was the dream. Now we will tell its interpretation before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the glory. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or beasts of the field, or birds of the sky, he has given them into your hand, and has caused you to rule over them. You are the head of gold. After you, there will be arise another kingdom, inferior to you. Then another third kingdom, of bronze, which will rule over all the earth. Then there will be a fourth kingdom, as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things, so, like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces. In that you saw the feet and toes, partially of potter's clay and partially of iron. It will be a divided kingdom, but it will have in it the toughness of iron, inasmuch as you saw the iron mixed with common clay. As the toes of the feet were partially of iron, partially of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong, and part will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery.
Okay, so we have the dream that Nebuchadnezzar has. We won't go into a lot of detail of how that led up to there, but we see that these are four successive empires is what he is talking about, because he gives the example of Nebuchadnezzar being there. You rule over all the earth. You know, your kingdom is great. Wherever the sons of men dwell, the beasts of the field, God has given them into your hand, and you rule over them. Okay, so talking about an empire. Okay, so the Babylonian Empire was the first of the four successive empires. Okay, that's another important note there as well, is that he gives us a starting point. Okay, he says, you are the head of gold. So you have the statue, the gold, and the gold head, silver, bronze, and arms, waist and thighs as bronze, and iron feet, and partly iron and clay of iron legs, and partly iron and clay feet. Okay, and so remember a couple things from that. Another thing to remember is in talking about the iron, it talks about the iron crushing and breaking all things to pieces. So kind of remember that reference here as we continue on. But we know that Babylon was the first of the four successive empires. And that's what Daniel says there. Okay, so let's go back to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7, verse 3. Notice the point that Daniel makes here. He says that there's four great beasts coming up from the sea, different from one another. They're different from one another here in Daniel. Okay, so we see the first one, the first beast was in chapter verse 4, chapter 7, verse 4. Is the first one is the Babylonian Empire, and you get that reference to where the had it was like a lion and the wings were like an eagle, and then he looked until they were plucked and he raised up like a man. I mean, that's a reference to Nebuchadnezzar's humbling, where he was animal-like for 7 years, and then he received a mind of a man again and rose back up, so to speak. Okay, that's that picture of the Babylonian Empire from that first empire of the four successive empires. Okay, verse 5, the second beast would be the Medo-Persian Empire. Okay, the joint kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, the empire that made, and they controlled over all the earth. Just they were a little inferior to Babylon, they were a little less, but they still controlled over all the earth. And that's in verse 5, an example of a bear, one resembling a bear, and it was raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth, and it says, "Rise and go devour much meat." So you have that picture, you know, the same with, and if we go to chapter 8, which we won't go there today for this purpose, but you have it specifically mentions that ram in chapter 8 of Daniel, of the ram having one horn longer than the other, okay? And so you see the bear, one side is taller than the other, okay? But they devour much meat. They're ruthless, they're a conquering nation, okay? They conquered the Babylonian Empire. Okay, so the Medes and the Persians would be the second beast there, resembling the bear coming up out of the sea. Remember, it's successive empires. Okay, first four beasts. The first one is the eagle. Then the second one. Same thing with the statues. The first one's Babylon. The next one's Medo-Persia. Okay, then in verse 6, you would have the third beast would represent the Greek Empire. Okay. Because it has the picture of a leopard. A leopard is fast. When Alexander the Great conquered the world, he did it within 10 years. That's really fast back then. I mean, it's really fast now to conquer the world in 10 years. But back then, specifically, that's really fast. But then he died, and four kingdoms, smaller kingdoms, not empires, took his place. Now, I want to stop there a second because, I mean, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but it's important to note is that when the statue and the beast here are representing four empires, that doesn't mean there wasn't another smaller kingdom somewhere, okay? So when the four heads there of the leopard with wings, if it gives that picture, they didn't control all the earth, okay? The successive, the four kingdoms that came from Alexander the Great's generals, they didn't control all the earth. They had four smaller kingdoms. Okay? So when we're talking about empires that rule over all the earth, when we talk about successive empires, it doesn't mean there wasn't anything prior to that. Okay, like a smaller kingdom. Okay? Babylon or Greece fell like sort of self-destruct themselves. Okay, and so then you have the fourth beast in verse 7, and it says, he kept looking at the night visions, and the fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying, extremely strong, and had large iron teeth, and it devoured and crushed and trampled all the remainder under its feet. Okay, so remember, what was the fourth empire of chapter 2? It was the iron empire, which would be Rome. Okay, the Roman Empire, you have the iron legs in chapter 2, the iron teeth in chapter 7. Okay, now the iron legs in chapter 2 reference that they crush and devour, breaks everything. In chapter 7, it says that iron crushes and devours and trampled underfoot all the remainder. Okay, so you see that picture there is that we have the four kingdoms of chapter 2 is Babylon or empires, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome, all empires. It's the same in chapter 7. You have Babylon, Greece, or Medo-Persia, Greece, and then Rome. Okay, so these four beasts here come up from the sea. Okay, so there's instability there. Yeah, you know, that picture that. So when we see a beast coming from the sea, what that's talking about then, that is, I'm getting ahead of myself here. The fourth beast there, remember, also is pictured as having 10 horns. Okay, has pictured as having 10 horns. Okay, so let's now, before I make that point I was going to make, let's compare this beast, or these four beasts, with the beast in Revelation 13. Okay, let's go back to Revelation 13 there. There's no questions on that. Maybe we can go through here, and if there's any questions, we can answer some of those in a second here. So Revelation 13, verse 1 and 2. Notice how John describes the beast. Let's work backwards for a minute, okay? So think of working in reverse order here. I saw a beast coming up out of the sea having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on its horns were 10 diadems, and on its heads were blasphemous names. And I saw and the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth was like the mouth of a lion. And a dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. Okay? So you have this beast in Revelation 13 that has 10 horns, like Rome, was like a leopard, like Greece, was a picture, had the feet of a bear, like the Medes and the Persians, and had a mouth of a lion, like Babylon. That's what Daniel, so when John is writing these things down, we think of, and maybe, I'm not sure if people think this or not, and sometimes we might fall into the trap too, that we think it's totally unrelated to the Old Testament. Times when John's writing this down and when God is inspiring John to do this, he's referencing things that he's wrote down before. Okay, there's a lot of things he references. He gives us detail of some things that he wrote down to help us learn and understand. Now, not all the detail. No, I'm not saying all the detail, but he gives us things. So when we're thinking of this beast that comes out of the sea, if we don't have the New Testament with us, if we're reading John's letter, because they didn't have the New Testament until John completed his letter. So we have the letter, and we read about this beast coming from the sea. Oh, where have we read that before? Oh, the Daniel, because they have the Old Testament scriptures. Oh, this beast that has 10 horns. Well, that's in Daniel. Oh, this beast that looks like a leopard. Oh, that's in Daniel. Oh, this beast looks like has the feet of a bear. That's in Daniel. This beast that has the mouth of a lion. That's also in Daniel. So we're referencing that back to Daniel then, okay? So this beast is a combination of all four beasts of Daniel chapter 7, okay? So phrasing this correctly, it's the governments of the world, not a one world government. Okay? That's important to note there, is that there is all four of these in one is the picture there. Okay? It's the governments, the instability, the governments that are viewed as beasts coming from the sea, unstable. This picture John's giving us here is all of them in one. It's the governments of the world, okay? Continue on here. Go back to Revelation chapter 12. Look at a comparison here for a minute. We've also read about something with 10 horns and 7 heads that's not this beast, but back in chapter 12, we read about the dragon. Someone like to read verse 3 again there, please, of Revelation chapter 12. Okay, so if your Bible uses the word diadems, that's basically a crown. Okay, if that's what he's saying. So on the there is this dragon has and notice the order. I thought that I just picked up on the order this morning a little bit. I've read it before, but He says seven heads and 10 horns is what the dragon has. And on his heads were seven diadems or seven crowns. Okay. If you look ahead to Revelation chapter 13, the beast, so you see Satan's identity is what's first mentioned, if you want to say it that way, with his heads. But remember when we went in the introduction, it was horns represents power. Okay, Satan has power, yes. But notice here in verse 1 of chapter 13, it says, I saw a beast out of the sea having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on its horns were 7 diadems. Okay, now so the what's referenced first there, or on his horns were 10 diadems. What's referenced first there is his power, not really his identity. Because all this beast is, the identity isn't as important as the power. See, that the beast is a picture of is a picture of all of those governments combined, but his power is what is crowned. See, it was Satan's heads that were crowned. So Satan is actually reigning. It's just the power that Satan gives the beast, that's what is reigning with the beast. The beast doesn't have the power of himself, or as you say, the governments of the world don't have power of themselves. Even Jesus references that with Pilate. He says that you wouldn't have no authority if unless my Father gave it to you. You know, I know we're talking about something slightly different, but the idea there is that the governments of the world don't have power and authority from their own, from like self-power, okay? They got it from the devil, is a thing. Okay, that's what he's saying. The devil gave his authority to the beast, okay? It's his horns that are crowned, not his heads, okay? So it's really Satan is the one who is reigning. It's only the power that the beast, of the beast that rules, okay? Because again, kingdom, or right, ruler, I should say, ruler or leader or whatever changes all the time, but the kingdom can stay for a while and last longer than certain rulers or certain people in authority. But one person, I mean, and it eventually goes away too, and we'll talk about that here in a second. But over top of that, there is one that is even longer than that, and that's the devil who gave them the authority. Okay, so he is reigning. It's the power that is reigning. Of the power of the beast that's reigned, the beast actually doesn't have the authority unless it was given to him. Okay, yeah, it looks like he has the authority, but Satan is the one who's really behind it and reigning there. Let's look back to Daniel chapter 10 again here. We went through this before in some lessons past to look at a couple things, but I want to point out this reference and remind ourselves again here. Daniel chapter 10, verses 1 through 3. If someone would like to read that to start with. Daniel 10, verse 1 through 3, please.
In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. And the message was true and one of great conflict, but he understood the message and had an understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks. I did not eat any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks were completed.
Okay, so 3 weeks here, Daniel sees this vision, bothers him a lot. He didn't eat for 3 weeks. Okay, didn't drink anything, didn't take care of himself. He's tormented, so to speak, or mourning over this vision that he had. Okay, so someone like to skip down to verse 10 and read verse 10 through 13, please.
And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel, man of high esteem, understand the words that I am about to tell you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding, this and on humbling yourself before your God. Your words were heard, and I have come in response to your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left there with the kings of Persia.
Okay, so if we see here, so Daniel hadn't ate for 3 weeks, and it says here that this angel says that he is heard from the first day, but he was prevented from the prince of the kingdom of Persia for 21 days to bring this message to Michael. Okay, now just before we finish up here, someone like to read verse 20, please.
Then he said, "Do you understand why I came to you? But I shall now return to fight against the prince of Persia, so I am leaving. And behold, the prince of Greece is about to come."
Okay, so we just got done talking about the successive empires of Babylon. And now notice, if we read in verse 1, it's the third year of Cyrus, the king of Persia. Babylon's already gone, okay? The next empire is the Medes and the Persians, which is the one he is in right now. And the next one would be the kingdom of Greece, okay? And so we can't honestly think that this angel was stopped by the physical king of Persia, because he wasn't. If we reference 2 Kings chapter 19, verse 35, an angel of the Lord killed 185,000 Assyrians when they were threatening to attack Israel during Hezekiah's reign. So the physical prince of Persia wasn't thwarting this angel from coming to Daniel for 3 weeks. The prince of Persia he's referring to is the devil. Remember, because the devil is the one who gives the authority to the governments of the world. So the Persian Empire at the time was the one who was the world power. Okay, but he's referenced as the prince of Persia. The devil is. But then he references in verse 20, the angel says, "I'm going to go back and fight him, but then the prince of Greece is coming shortly." So the devil just jumps from Persia, or really jumped from Babylon to Persia, to Greece, to Rome, to whatever empire or whatever world power it is. Okay, and we'll get into more about in the church age what happens there probably a little bit later, not today, but sometime. But he jumps kingdoms. I mean, The empire, the Babylonian Empire, is no good to Satan at this time here in Daniel chapter 10, because they had already fallen. But the Persian Empire was really good to Satan, was really useful to him, because he could use that to persecute God's people somehow. And we see that happening. Everybody heard of the story of Haman and Mordecai in the book of Esther. Okay, that stuff happened. The people of God were still persecuted. The devil's trying to stamp it out and trying to destroy it somehow. Okay, trying to destroy the line to get to Jesus. Okay, he's done that all the time, even in the Old Testament. Okay, so when we are looking at this here, then Satan jumps from government to government in order to persecute God's people. Okay, so the when we see that it's the heads of Satan that are crowned, it's the power of the beast that is crowned. Okay, it's not the beast itself having authority in himself to do that. Back to Revelation chapter 13. Any questions on that prior to, I guess, before we... Okay. Revelation 13, verse 3. It references there that the fatal wound was healed. Okay, now there's your ideas of what this is. And I have my own ideas of what this is. Maybe I'll share them sometimes or not, but I think the important thing is not so much. I mean, the fatal wound is important, and for the sake of time, I don't want to talk about it too much. Except for the thing is important to point out is that the fatal wound is healed quickly. So whether it's certain times where the church had peace, whether it's certain things that allow for more freedom in the gospel expansion, whether it's one particular thing or maybe it's a reoccurring thing. I'm tending right now to lean towards it can be a reoccurring thing, little bit more. I think there are specific things you can look back into where there was more freedom that's give or more opportunity for the gospel to move forward, less persecution for the church in areas. I think it could be a reoccurring theme. I'm not going to take a hard ground on that because I think it's important to point out that the wound is healed quickly. Whatever the wound is or was, and if it's reoccurring or not, you know, it's healed quickly. So the beast is not out of commission for that long. Okay, so I think that's the most important thing to understand right now is that the beast is not out of commission for that long. And we should be really skeptical of good governments. Okay. Verse 4 and 5. It talks about there that the end of verse 3 that the whole earth followed after the beast. And then in verse 4 and 5, and then in verse 8, it says, they worship the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who is able to wage war with him? And there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months was given to him. And then skipping out of verse 8, it says, all who dwell on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the Lamb's Book of Life, who has been slain. Okay, so 42 months is, we asked at the beginning of the class, 42 months is the church age. 1260 days is equivalent to 42 months. If you want to say it in years, it's 3.5 years, or time and a half a time. Okay, and so this is the church age. So the beast is the governments of the world, and he that's reigning throughout that time. Satan, if Satan jumped from government to government in the old covenant, you think he's not going to do that still under the new covenant? So he is using the government, or the governments of the world. I don't want to say government as singular because it's not just one. We need to understand it's not just going to be just one. That's also important to understand too. It's not just going to be one world. It's the governments of the world. Yeah, they might have a common purpose, but it's governments of the world as a whole. Not one central government, that he's saying here. Okay, so the people of the world worship every form of government during that time. And I was trying to think of how to word that, but that's the way I think it needs to be worded, because that they if the beast is representing governments, which he is, then when they worship the beast, they're worshiping every form of government. Whether it looks good or not. And so by doing that, though, they're worshiping Satan, because what's the mindset on then? The mindset's on physical things versus spiritual things. It's on things of the earth. It's on prosperity of the in the world versus prosperity in heaven. Okay, versus treasures on the world versus treasures in heaven. Okay, so that's that mindset there again. So they're worshiping the beast. And again, when we understand what worshiping is, truly understand what worshiping is, they're not singing to him. Okay? They're bowed in submission to him, like in submission to them in their heart is what they are. So because they're submitting to the government, as in like the government's always this way. Who can stand in front of him? Who can make war with him? This is a great thing. And because they're doing that, they're also submitting themselves to Satan as well. And that's what he's saying there. Because going back to the sermon this morning, if you're not for Christ, you're against him, right? So you're either subject to Christ or you're not subject to him. You're subject to Christ or you're subject to the devil or whoever else is not God. Someone like to read verse 6 and 7 there of Revelation chapter 13, please.
And he opened his mouth and blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, that is, those who dwell in heaven. And it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him.
Okay. So if you were to look at this here, from a premillennial standpoint, the saints should already be in heaven, because they're raptured, if the premillennialist view is right. But it says here, it says it two different ways. It says all who are on the earth will worship the beast, but it says somehow the beast is able to make war with them, with the saints. Well, if they're already in heaven, how can he make war with the saints and overcome them if they've already been raptured up? Okay, so the picture then is here is that, again, you viewing through spiritual glasses here, is that those who dwell in heaven is referencing the church, whether they are actually in heaven or they're here on earth. Okay, that's how the beast can still make war and overcome the saints. Even though they dwell in heaven spiritually, he still can make war with some of them because some of them are still on earth. When it references those who are on the earth, that's referencing the lost or the wicked, those who are worshiping the beast. Okay, so because you can't have it both ways here. I mean, either the saints are on the earth and the saints are worshiping the beast, or they're on the earth, but they're talked about as being those who dwell in heaven. Because that's what it even says in verse 6 there. He opened up his mouth at blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle or his temple, which is the church, that is those who dwell in heaven, it says. It's not something still in the future. It's not something that's only those who are in heaven. The scriptures talk about the church being the temple of God or the tabernacle of God. Okay? So when the beast is blaspheming the tabernacle, he is blaspheming against the church. He's speaking slanderous things against the body of Christ. He still can persecute some of them because we don't all dwell in heaven actually right now. I mean, we're spiritually dwelling in heaven. And that reference we got there in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 4, says we've been raised up and seated with Christ in the heavenly places. And we went through that a few times here. For the sake of time, we won't go back to that verse today. But the lost follow after every form of physicality. Okay, you know, if by chance the righteous overcome the wicked and make their form of government, that's still a lost form because it's focused on physical things. You know, the Crusades were the Catholic Crusades when they went and fought and they made people convert. That worked really good. That really changed their heart, I'm sure. You know, that idea of that physical form of government. I'm not talking about that the Catholics were righteous at all. I'm just saying is that even if you overtake the governments of the world to make a righteous government, it's still not going to be a righteous government. Maybe there's a wound for a time, but it's not very long. Maybe our Constitution was a wound for a time. I think it probably was, but it's not very long. It wasn't. It didn't last very long. The wound is healed quickly. And so our focus needs to be we are in heaven spiritually, and that's where our focus needs to be, because the beast, whatever form he takes, whatever form Satan jumps to, is the power that Satan that it reigns, but Satan is still behind it. Okay, he jumps to one, to the other, to the other, to the other. Okay, now let's look back here a second. I told reference back here before we close it. Look back in chapter 12, verse 17. Now remember, there is no chapters and verses when John wrote this, okay? This is a continuous letter through here. So, in verse 17, it says that, so the dragon was enraged with the woman, which is the church, and he went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus. And the dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. Then I saw the beast coming up out of the sea. Now, if you read it like that, you see that the dragon has been thrown down in chapter 12. He can no longer accuse us before God day and night. He's thrown down now. He's trying to destroy the woman. He can't destroy the woman. And he's enraged, so he goes and he makes war with the rest of her offspring, or the individual Christians. And then it carries on in there, and some versions say just he stood, but it's in the context, it's the dragon stood on the sand of the seashore, almost like he can't accuse us in heaven anymore. He's been cast down, he couldn't destroy the church, and he's waiting for the beast to come up out of the sea so that he can give him authority, and he's gonna rule so that the beast can go. What does he do in chapter 13? Or chapter 13, verse 7. What does it say the beast does? it was also given to him to make war with the saints. Satan was enraged. He went away to make war with the rest of the saints, the offspring of the woman. And he gives his authority to the beast, and the beast goes and makes war with the saints. So it's almost like Satan, I mean, that picture is like Satan just waiting at the seashore, waiting for the beast to come. So he could give him his authority, but still control him. Because he can no longer stand before God and accuse us. So he's trying to make war with us so he can use the governments of the world to persecute the church. And that is not a foreign thing whatsoever. We can talk ourselves out of it that Satan's not behind the governments of the world. But you want to read your Bible at all? You want to look at any history at all? The governments of the world have just flat out been used to persecute the church. Flat out been used. Okay. And so it's not a foreign concept to think this, to think that this is talking about the governments of the world and Satan using them to destroy us. Okay. Now, obviously, we're going to get into another beast a little later, but we need to make sure and understand that the devil's behind a lot of this stuff. And so when we're looking into this here, even though, as we're going to see here, there's a lot of persecution, and he reigns for 42 months. Remember what we read about in chapter 11? We read about the church having great authority for 42 months as well. Okay, so it's really easy to get stuck in, well, the beast can just do whatever, you know. But the church has authority too, and the church is protected. That's why, you know, we see chapter 11, and that's why it's important to understand it's a chronological book too, because the enemies get greater and greater, but the victory gets greater and greater as well, even though the sections are still divided into each individual section. Okay, the church has great authority for 42 months. The church is nourished for 42 months, or 1,260 days, or 3.5 years, or whatever you want to say. Yes, and then the beast is given that the beast has authority for that. See how God encourages first, and then he drops then he lets us know there's persecution. Okay, and if you don't have the encouragement of the church being victorious before that, you get kind of bummed about it. But if we remember back that the church is protected, the church has authority, the church is able to withstand some of this stuff if we're faithful, then when the beast has authority for 42 months, all that does to the church is makes us look forward to past after the 42 months, after the church age when Christ returns. And that turns our focus to heaven, not on things on earth. Anybody have any comments or questions here before we close? Okay, well, we'll stop there today and we'll pick up next time in chapter 13.